Hello and welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. The shuttle for proximity. Indirect talks between the Israelis and Palestinians have begun with the goal to find a peace settlement after decades of conflict. What makes this round of talks different from the past? And is a viable Palestinian state even possible today? To discuss the possibility of a two-state solution, I'm joined by Norman Finkelstein in New York. He's a political scientist and author of a new book, This Time We Went Too Far, The Truth and Consequences of the Gaza Invasion, published by Aura Books. And Benny Morris in Beit Shemesh, he's a professor at Ben-Gurion University and the author of One State, Two States, Resolving the Israel-Palestine Conflict, published by Yale University Press, and another member of our Crosstalk team, Yelena Hanga. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you like. Benny, I'd like to go to you first. In Israel, you're widely regarded, maybe the best historian of the Israel-Palestine conflict. How do you believe, what is at the root of this conflict? And what's one step we can go towards resolving it?
Well, at the root of the conflict, in terms of the Arabs, is the fact that the Zionists, Jews, began to settle, to return from Europe and to settle in Palestine, or the land of Israel as they called it, at the end of the 19th century and during the first half of the 20th century. The Arabs didn't want the Jews to be here, they didn't want them to establish a state here, they didn't want to share the land with them either in a binational state or in a two-state solution, and they resisted the Zionists, and this is the root of the conflict from the Arab side.
Okay, Norman, if I can go to you, is that your interpretation as well?
Well, I'm more inclined to agree with what Professor Morris has written in the past. So if you open up his book, his standard history of the conflict, Righteous Victims, he says that it was, and now I'm quoting him, the fear of territorial displacement and dispossession, which was the chief motor of Arab resistance to Zionism. In a word, it was the fear that they were going, the Palestinians, their fear that they were going to be dispossessed and displaced from their homeland. And then Mr. Morris went on to say, in another one of his important books, he said that the idea of transfer or expulsion of the indigenous population, what we nowadays call ethnic cleansing, he said that idea was inbuilt and inevitable in Zionism. Those are his words, because he said there was no other way to turn an area which was overwhelmingly Arab into an area which was a Jewish state. And he said this transfer idea, which was inevitable and inbuilt in Zionism, he said that automatically produced resistance from the indigenous population, from the Arab population. The resistance of the Arabs to Zionism, with its inbuilt idea of expelling the indigenous population, was no different than the resistance of Native Americans in North America to the Euro-American desire to create.
All right, Norman, you made your point. Let Benny reply to that.
I think Dr. Phil Finkelstein is, of course, right in quoting me, because I do actually know something about the history. But I think he's selectively quoting. I would say certainly that the Arabs in Palestine, from a certain point on, did fear some form of displacement, and in fact the change of the country in character from an Arab-Muslim territory into at least partially Jewish territory. But this still doesn't undermine what I said before. The Arabs did not want the Jews to come here, and they resisted them, and they objected to a partition of the land between the two peoples into two states. This has been a consistent Palestinian position, that no part of Palestine should be given to the Jews as sovereign territory. 5%, 10%, 15%, 50%, none of it should belong to the Jews as a sovereign territory for the Jews. The Palestinians should have it all.
Okay, Norman, do you want to reply to that, or are we going to move on?
I would just say briefly two things. Number one, Professor Morris devotes quite a lot of space in his books to documenting the idea of what he called transfer. It wasn't an issue of living with the Jews. It was an issue of the Jews expelling the indigenous population from the area of Palestine where Jews intended to create a Jewish state. So there wasn't an issue here of coexistence. It was an issue of expulsion. As to whether or not the Arabs or the Palestinian Arabs have acquiesced in the idea of a two-state settlement of the conflict, I think we'll probably get to that later when we discuss solutions. Right now, I think we're looking at the history,
and I'm simply quoting what Dr. Morris not only wrote, but
extensively documented.
Okay, Benny, go ahead. Go ahead, Benny.
Okay, Doctor, just one sentence, one sentence. I think Dr. Finkelstein is fixated on the problem of transfer and expulsion and doesn't see the wider picture. That is one element, but it's only one element in the big picture.
All right, let's speed up to the present here. We did some history here.
Except it was Dr. Morris who repeatedly said that the Zionist movement looked at transfer, and now I'm quoting him, as the chief means for resolving the problem with the Arabs. So if he calls
Dr. Morris, you really shouldn't deny what's already in print. I'm not denying anything.
You are distorting what I've said. Transfer was an element in Zionist thinking. Anyone can turn.
I think the moderator has to. No. You can't have.
All right, gentlemen. Let's move forward. We did some history. Let's talk about the present. If I go to you, Benny, there have been people that are saying that Obama himself, because of the impasse in what's been called the peace process, which I haven't seen any evidence really of, that Obama may try to impose something himself. If he were to do something like that, what do you think would be fair?
Well, I've always thought since the year 2000 that the Clinton parameters, which the previous President Clinton published in December 2000, represent a fair, just solution to the conflict. In other words, a two-state solution with the Palestinians essentially getting the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, and the Jews retaining the territory which they had control of before 1967. That's essentially a two-state solution, which is the only fair and just solution to the conflict. It's possible if Bo Bama publishes his own parameters, my assumption is that they will be more or less in line with what President Clinton proposed back in 2000.
Okay, but Norman, I mean, considering the settlement situation in the West Bank, I mean, is that realistic at all? Is any Israeli government going to say to 500,000 settlers, pack up and leave? It's politically not going to happen.
I don't know. We can't say with any certainty what politically will happen, because as you know from other historical examples, say in the case of Algeria, at the end of the Algerian War, 1 million Pied Noir, Algerians who lived in French, who lived in Algeria and who lived there for a full century, about 1 million Pied Noir, one out of every 9 Algerians went back to their homeland. So you can't say with any certainty that some settlement prospect is impossible. What I would like, however, to look at is the record on this issue. I agree with Dr. Morris that probably the only feasible settlement and the politically supported settlement is one that calls for two states with a full Israeli withdrawal from the territories it occupied in June 1967, and a just resolution of the refugee question based on the right of return and compensation. Those are the terms for resolving the conflict, those terms have been endorsed by the entire international community. And you can see it by looking at the United Nations General Assembly
Finkelstein,
each
can
year. All right, Dr. Morris,
so
go ahead, Benny. Benny,
so every
go,
year,
Benny, go ahead. Benny, go ahead. Before we go to the break, go ahead.
Can I interject? Again, Dr. Finkelstein is twisting things. The international community does not support a settlement of the refugee problem based on the right of return. In fact, the international community, except for some banana republics in Africa and Arab and Muslim countries, do not support the right of return of refugees. This is something clearly ruled out by the Clinton parameters, by the West in general, since 1949.
If I could jump in here after a short break, we'll continue our discussion on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Stay with RT. But before, let's see who Russians support in this conflict.
A new round of talks between Israelis and Palestinians is underway. The Palestinians have agreed to so-called proximity talks set up with a four-month deadline to produce results. U.S. Middle East envoy George Mitchell is holding indirect negotiations in a bid to start the direct peace process between Palestinians and Israelis. Many see it as the first significant step forward in the Obama administration's attempts to break the deadlock in Israeli-Palestinian relations since talks stopped in December 2008. Among Russians, there is no strong preference supporting a particular side in this conflict. According to a Levada Center study, 12% of Russians feel sympathy with Palestinians and another 10% with Israel. Back to you, Peter.
All right, Benny, before we went to the break, we were talking about how the international community looks at the right of return. Do you want to summarize real quickly what you had to say before we went to the break?
Yeah. The return of 5 million Palestinian refugees, and that's the number the Palestinians cite, to the area of the State of Israel would demolish the State of Israel and would turn it instantly into an Arab state from a Jewish state. There would be no Jewish state. So almost every Israeli I know opposes what the Palestinians are demanding, which is the return of the Palestinian refugees. And the West, America, Western Europe, etc., do not support the right of return, as the Palestinians call it, of the refugees. Unfortunately, the Palestinian leadership, both Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, insist that Israel must accept this right of return. And this is simply not going to happen, and this is a major obstacle on the road to a possible solution.
Okay, Norman, I get that's a political solution there, but is that morally fair? Is that fair to the Palestinians? I mean, the Israelis have a right of return.
Well, I would like to make 2 points, or I should say quickly 3 points. Number one, we have a rich documentary record on this question. It's not a matter of speculation. Mr. Morris, or Dr. Morris, seems to think that the only people who support the right of return are what he calls a few banana republics. But every year, the United Nations General Assembly votes on a resolution called Peaceful Settlement of the Palestine Question. Every year, the United Nations General Assembly votes on a resolution called Peaceful Settlement of the Palestine Question. And one of the terms of the settlement is a just resolution of the refugee question based on the right of return. And the vote this past year was 164-7. The whole world on one side, including all the European countries, the whole world on one side, the United States, Israel, Australia, Nauru, Palau, Micronesia, and the Marshall Islands on the other side. If you look at the major human rights organizations in the world, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, both of them produced position papers in 2000 and 2001 in which they endorsed the right of return of the Palestinian refugees and what they called succeeding generations that have maintained genuine links with the land. So I think Mr. Morris has the world topsy-turvy. It's just a few banana republics, or in this case, South Sea Islands, who don't support the Palestinian right of return.
Okay.
Let me just turn to a second point.
This is pure nonsense. I mean,
Mr. Morris wears often many different. Dr. Morris often wears many different hats. So in the hat he's wearing this afternoon on this program, he's saying he supports the Clinton parameters of 2000. But let me read you some of his other hats. Mr. Morris has said that David Ben-Gurion in 1948, his big mistake, and now I'm quoting him.
This isn't relevant.
His big mistake was that
not relevant to the questions.
No, it's very relevant. Dr. Morris, you're wearing many different hats.
We were asked about the
colored negotiations. Let's see some of your other hats,
Dr. Morris. Gentlemen, let's keep moving forward. Please, gentlemen, please, let's keep moving forward. Benny Morris, I'd like to ask you a question.
Peter.
All right, Norman, real quick. Go ahead, because I don't want to waste all our time just talking over each other.
Right,
go ahead.
Okay.
Ask me the question you want. I don't want Finkelstein reading various quotes from various places, which have no relevance to the question at hand. Dr. Morris cannot filibuster.
Okay,
That's not right.
I'm not filibustering. You're introducing nonsense.
I need clear points from both of you.
Talk about the current situation.
I want to talk about the Goldstone report right now. Okay? That's what we're going to talk about right now. Benny, I noticed a few days after the invasion.
I don't think that's right, Peter. Peter, you're allowing him to filibuster, and I don't think that's right.
Yeah, but Norman, we're wasting way too much.
We're wasting time on Benny Morris
instead of the subject.
I want to get back to substance, gentlemen. Benny, you wrote a few days after in the New York Times that appraising the highly efficient air assault on Hamas. Okay, then we have the Goldstone that comes out, the Goldstone report. And he said Israel launched, quote, a deliberately disproportionate attack designed to punish, humiliate, and terrorize a civilian population. What's your opinion of that report?
I think it's unbalanced. I think that any Western army facing terrorists and guerrillas who hide behind a human shield, behind civilians, inevitably will use disproportionate force and will cause civilian casualties. And this is what the Hamas also wants, because then it can project it to people like Finkelstein and Goldstone as if Israel is attacking civilians. But Israel actually quite efficiently knocked out the Hamas's infrastructure in Gaza. Civilians were killed. I don't think Israel deliberately targeted them. I don't think Goldstone is right about that. I think this is a lie in his report. It did kill civilians, but this is what happens when terrorists launch attacks on Western countries from behind civilian shields.
Okay, Norman, respond, please. You wrote a book on this subject, on the Gaza War.
Right. There is, as I said earlier, there is also an extensive documentary record on what happened in Gaza. More than a dozen human rights reports came out. So let's look at the record as against Dr. Morris's fantasy. All the human rights organizations agreed. There is no evidence that Hamas engaged in human shielding in Gaza. You can look at Amnesty International, its report, 22 Days of Death and Destruction. And it goes very thoroughly through the record, and it concludes there is no evidence that Hamas engaged in human shielding. Number two, no, Mr. Morris, you really have to let me talk. You can't be so rude. Number two, Dr. Morris says that Israel very effectively knocked out what he called Hamas's infrastructure. So let's see what that infrastructure consisted of. It consisted of direct attacks, intentional attacks on Israeli on Palestinian hospitals. It consisted of intentional Israeli attacks on 23 of 28
in the basement of one of the hospitals.
Dr. Morris, you have to let me speak. Peter, is
but
this
you're
right?
You're telling the listeners something which is untrue.
I'm quoting.
Well, I mean, Benny. To be fair,
he's
giving his assessment of the Goldstone report. I asked you your assessment, and I'm asking Norman now.
Obviously,
they're different.
Okay, Peter, fine.
Peter,
go ahead, Norman. You got the floor. Go.
Peter, that's not even correct. I'm not giving you my assessment. I'm citing you the findings of all the human rights organizations. Israel attacked 23 of 28 of Gaza's cement factories. It attacked the only operative flour mill in Gaza. It attacked the chicken farms in Gaza. It sent in tanks to roll over the chickens, killed 100,000 chickens in Gaza. Now, I wonder, Mr. Morris, do you think those chicken farms were part of Hamas infrastructure? Do you think the flour mill was part of Hamas infrastructure?
It depends if they were Hamas
when
chickens.
Israel dropped white phosphorus, when Israel dropped white phosphorus on Al-Wafa Hospital and on Al-Quds Hospital, were those hospitals on which Israel dropped white phosphorus, a substance that reaches 1,500 degrees? Was that Hamas infrastructure, Mr. Morris?
Okay, can I say something?
Benny, go ahead. We're running out of time. Very quickly, please.
We know that during the campaign, the 3-4 week campaign in Gaza, the bulk of the Hamas leadership, military and civilian, hid in the basement of one of the hospitals in Gaza. And did so knowing that Israel would not attack
fantasy.
The hospital and get to them. It's not fantasy, this happens to be
right.
truth.
Benny's
and Israel
fantasy.
Did not attack that hospital, as it didn't attack any
Dr.
hospital
Morris,
in Gaza,
where is the
as
evidence?
You know. Whether there were Hamas
the evidence,
gunmen inside
Dr.
the chicken
Morris.
Coops, I don't know, and you don't know
Dr.
either.
Dr. Morris, I read all the reports issued by Israel.
All right, gentlemen, we've run out of time, and I'm afraid we didn't accomplish very much here. Sorry, Norman, here. Many thanks to my guests today, Norman Finkelstein and Benny Morris, and thanks to my viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules.